south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, you heard me say that I took Sunday off, a vacation day, to go to another one of those all-inclusive resorts. Got invited to one. And, of course, you regular listeners know that I came back from one of those all-inclusive resorts a month and a half ago. It was one of those Hard Rock Hotel resorts, and I was very disappointed in the place. I mentioned how it wasn't worth it, and I'd never go back. However, just this last weekend, I was invited to another completely different resort, and it, too, was practically devoid of people. I'd say maybe they had 20% occupancy, and, you know, in a way, that's good. I kind of prefer it when people aren't yelling and laughing and crowding you, and kids are kept in line and not underfoot and screaming. Well, I'm happy to report that the resort was quite nice, and they solved the problem of the buffets. Now, you heard me say last time at the Hard Rock, they'd completely eliminated the food buffets. You had to order a la carte off the menu, and you didn't even get a menu. You had to scan a barcode, and your menu popped up on your cell phone. Absolutely ridiculous idea and terribly difficult to read. You know how big those screens are on the cell phone, right? Anyway, I was relieved to see that someone finally figured out a way to do the buffet to everyone's satisfaction. So at least at this resort, the buffets were alive and well. And, you know, for me, that's one big part of going to one of those all-inclusives. The buffets, where you've got like 200 kinds of food. And no matter what you're into, you've got massive choices. Anyway, here's how they solved it. When you walk into the restaurant, you check in with a waiter, and they hand you one latex glove. You put that on your right hand or left hand if you're a lefty. And you're instructed to use that when you're up at the buffet line when scooping away with those ladles and tongs. Then, at the end of the buffet line, there's some lazy-ass waiter with a little trash can, and you toss that glove in the can and head to your seat. Now, personally, I don't think that kind of operation does anything at all as far as eliminating cross-contamination. But it's a nice show, and for all the undereducated sheeple out there, it does, I suppose, give you some peace of mind. Oh, and by the way, when I first walked into the room, there was a notice on the chair advising me of some of the do's and don'ts. One of the don'ts was, get this, hookahs are not allowed. This resort, it said, is a hookah-free zone. No hookahs allowed, indoors or out. Yeah, right, like they really had to go through all the trouble to print notices up and hand them out to everyone. Hey, but they did. You'd be surprised. Just a question for you guys out there. How many of you have toked on a hookah lately? I know. It seems rather odd that they'd even mention it or write it down. But I have to tell you, some weeks ago when I was at the Hard Rock, I saw quite a number of people toking on those big old hookahs in and around the swimming pools. And the people that were doing it? What a bunch of undereducated losers. They were busy passing the mouthpiece around and lipping it. A little unintended spit swap in there. While otherwise wearing masks and face shields. Yep, cove idiots on parade. You think? So, unlike the Hard Rock, at this particular resort, no hookahs allowed. All right, just a little heads up. Later in the program, we'll be hitting on more of the solar applications here in Latin America because I'm getting so many requests for information. Though I'd rather not do a whole show about solar because I know I'm going to bore the hell out of some people who are just not interested. Or maybe you're already off the grid or have an electric car and you're charging it from your solar panels at home. Hey, I'd like to think you listeners are doing that, or at least thinking seriously about it. Oh, and by the way, speaking of self-sufficiency and getting off the grid, have you seen the news lately where they're saying that in Texas they're finding that there's a brain-eating amoeba in some of the water supplies? I could be wrong, you know, but rumor has it that Joe Biden gets that stuff bottled for home delivery. I don't know. Man, after hearing that great news about water supplies, if you're not purifying your own water by now, I just don't know what to tell you, and I don't know why you're listening to this program. By the way, why are you listening to this? I know. It's for my bubbling personality, innate optimism, and overabundance of Christian kindness and charm, right? Yep, I knew that already. Anyway, later in the show, we'll be talking more about solar power, but I'd like to bring up one thing. Just in the past maybe a year or so, I've noticed more and more of these funky-looking LED light bulbs showing up here in Latin America. They're not your average LED light bulbs either. For one thing, they're slightly bigger. They're starting to show up everywhere except in gated, guarded communities and upscale residences. They're popping up everywhere, though, in lower and lower middle-class housing and small towns way out in the boonies. Now, I don't suppose most people up in the States have ever seen one of these, but you just might be seeing them more and more as brownouts and blackouts start rolling through your neighborhood, like what's been happening in California just lately. Anyway, these bulbs I've been seeing pop up everywhere look like those regular light bulbs that actually have an LED in them. You know what I'm talking about. They're made to kind of copy the old-style incandescent bulb, and thus screw like a regular bulb right into a socket. The whole point being they're LED lights, and so they use much less energy. I'm sure you've all got some of those around the house. What I'm talking about now is a bulb that looks like that, but slightly bigger. And they're bigger, you see, because they've got a little lithium battery and a sensor in them, so that if there's a momentary power outage or black or brownout, they stay lit for a while. So while they're screwed into the socket anyway, they're always making sure that battery's fully charged. And when they detect an outage, they automatically switch over to the battery and you still have light. So in a continuous power outage, you might have light for a couple more hours. So here in Latin America, they're available at practically every hardware store for $5 or $6. And with the middle and lower middle classes who don't have solar or an extra generator, they're all the rage. A very good and practical idea, actually. By the way, the fact is, even upscale Latinos who have enough money generally don't buy generators. That's because their power rarely goes out, and I'll get to that in a second. Now, the thing is, if you live in Latin America in a nice upscale subdivision or residential tower, you won't need those kind of bulbs because nicer neighborhoods and residential towers and office buildings, shopping malls and such have their own diesel generators that kick right in if there's a power outage or brownout. They use the same very big generators that hospitals use to maintain continuity of power. By the way, part of your maintenance cost, if you're in a condo complex or a residential tower, goes for keeping diesel in the tank on site. However, since the word maintenance, or at least the spirit of the word maintenance, does not exist in the Spanish language, you never know if the tank has been filled until you have a pretty good-sized power outage. But I have to say, from personal experience, in most cases, if you're in an upscale, gated, guarded community or residential tower, you won't have to worry about power. But you see, in middle and lower middle class areas, and sometimes out in the boonies, you will experience short power outages. In fact, in the place I lived in Guatemala for so long, in the Altiplano, that was out in the boonies, you'd get a few power outages during big storms, sometimes lasting an hour or two. While under normal conditions, there might be a power outage once or twice or three times a week, but only for a couple of minutes at a time, or even less. And before I went solar, you know, I had a gas generator. And I use that thing maybe 3 times a year, always right after a big storm where a tree took out a transformer down the line somewhere. In fact, I remember in 10 years, the longest I was without power was for about maybe 12 hours. And that was after a huge storm came through and a lot of trees fell down on power lines. So the point is, the little guys out in the boonies and people living in kind of crappy neighborhoods, they don't have to drag out the candles anymore when they have power outages. They just stock up on those special bulbs. So if you decide to live way out in the boonies, they're highly recommended and they're gluten-free. Of course, no matter where you are, the object is to go full solar eventually, right? But until then, as an insurance policy, it wouldn't hurt to pick up a couple of those bulbs. Now, the unfortunate thing is, for the sweaty masses, that is, though for you and I, it's kind of fortunate. In classist societies like Latin America, who do you think the electric companies prioritize? Why, it's the upscale neighborhoods, shopping centers, and areas where there are government buildings. And, of course, all those places and destinations scumbag politicians live and hang out. Now, of course, there's nothing fair about that. But let me tell you, if you happen to live in a neighborhood where there are a few scattered embassies, government buildings, shopping malls, or transnational businesses, you might never experience a power outage, except again, if there's a storm and some trees knock out power lines or transformers. Meanwhile, the poor folks and folks out in the boonies are far down on the list of priorities for utility companies. That means if you're some indigenous guy living 20 or 30 miles outside the big city, you might have 4 or 5 power outages a week, lasting anywhere from a couple of minutes to an hour or more. Meanwhile, in the nearby big city, the people there might not be experiencing power outages at all. That's just the way it is here in Latin America. And why? Those bulbs I was talking about earlier are becoming so popular. For some people way out in the boonies, it's either those things or bring out the candles. But here's the thing. Even if you've been living here in Latin America a long time and you've got really stable power, you got to know, worldwide, we're heading into some really bad times with lots of shortages. That means power plants and utilities are going to have shortages too. There will be disruptions in that supply chain. You can count on it. So you guys and gals in Uncle Slamland can expect a lot more outages, just like California. It'll be a worldwide phenomena, so you can expect that in Latin America too. Which is why, again, I suggest everyone get at least a portable solar power supply. That way, no matter what happens, you're always prepared with at least enough power day and night to run your refrigerator, a couple of lights, and your computer and television. And of course, if you can swing it, go completely solar and off the grid. Now, a really good portable solar power system, that means you can pick it up and throw it in the trunk of your car and the panels too. A really good quality one that'll last will cost you between $1,000 and $3,000. Note, there are lots and lots of cheapies out there, with tons of competition and dozens, maybe hundreds of different brand names. Well, let me just advise you, when you're shopping for one of those units, make sure you get one that stores and puts out minimum of 1 kilowatt, that's 1,000 watts in the battery. The more the better. 2,000 watts is excellent. 3,000 watts is fantastic, except now you're getting to a unit that's not so portable anymore. It's the batteries that really weigh the thing down. So by all means, I suggest getting a portable unit rated at 1 to 3 kilowatts. That's 1,000 to 3,000 watts. And the total wattage for your portable panels should be at least 400 watts. That should get you through any short-term power outages you might have. All the while, again, powering your refrigerator, a couple of lights, a TV, and a computer. Then the next day, you just set out your solar panels in the sun, and you'll be able to run all that stuff too. Plus, it'll recharge your batteries. And again, if you want my actual recommendations and diagrams, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, speaking of getting the hell out of Dodge, we have this little rant from the Now I've Seen Everything department. Or you could say the Now I've Smelled Everything department. Comes the news that there's a new app for your Android or iPhone, specifically for the Los Angeles and San Francisco metro areas. It's called, for lack of a nicer phrase, the Fresh Poop app. I you not. It's an app that advises you of all the fresh poop that's been deposited by one or more of the 60,000 homeless people wandering around in LA. And for San Francisco, it's called the Snap Crap app. Go ahead, look it up. You can't make this up. Now, according to Sean Miller, the developer of this app, he says, as of 2018, when I moved to San Francisco, I continued to see human waste on the streets every single day, and it seemed the problem was only getting worse and worse. Then he says, while most of the city's residents have just become numb to this routine, the germaphobe in me couldn't let it go. I desperately needed to develop Snap Crap, and I suspect other people had the idea too, but I didn't. Then he says, in the last 3 months, my app has been downloaded 10,000 times and continues to get hundreds of downloads a week, with people continuously uploading photos of poop shots by the minute, keeping the data current and fresh. Yeah, when it comes to poop, fresh is good, right? There you have it, reason 4,726 why you don't want to live in California. So the obvious next question is, how's that Plan B coming? You still on the fence? Well, if you fall off, check out the pavement first. Oh, and that reminds me of a conversation I got into the other day with a couple of Latinas. They asked me why I never had any kids. One of them said, Johnny, give me one good reason why not. And I said, well, for one, the diaper changing routine, no thanks. Then she said, really, Johnny? You wouldn't change your kids' diapers? I said, nope. Then she proceeded to give me some mama learning. She said, Johnny, don't you know, baby poop is not like regular poop. And I said, is that right? Are you saying it's nicer, it smells better, it's more sanitary? What are you saying? It's somehow a better class of poop? And she said, that's right, Johnny, all of the above. Well, I thought, how can you argue with that? Obviously, she wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, nor did she ever crack a biology book. But I digress. You think? By the way, I get questions all the time from gringos and expats down here regarding gassing up your car. People want to know the best and worst brands and what to look out for when filling up. Now, it seems to be that every single Latin American you run into thinks that if you have a nice, late model car, it must use premium or else. They're thoroughly convinced that regular gasoline is only for junks and boxes. So right now, I'll give you the poop on that. I couldn't help it. Just remember, in a past life, I was a real engineer, and thus I have some very smart engineering buddies. And believe me, we settled that gas topic 30 years ago now. So please disregard everything you may have read and heard. Number one, you never have to put premium gas in any of your cars, whether you're up in Uncle Slam Land or down here in Latin America, unless you have a high-performance vehicle that specifically states in the manual that it needs premium gas. That rules out about 98% of cars and trucks. But here's the thing. You should only be buying regular gas from a small group of well-known oil companies, ones that have been around 50 years or so, like Shell, Esso, Texaco, called Texaco here in Latin America, Chevron, and a few others. Of course, there are tons of no-name gas stations, too. I suggest if you're running out of gas and your only option is to go to a no-name station, by all means, get premium. Why? Because the well-known brands like Shell, Esso, and Texaco are absolute sticklers for quality control, whereas with the off-brands, they can be using gas that's been sitting around a long time and or rejected by the big boys. And it's a fact that some off-brand gasolines have contaminants and impurities in them, and that'll almost never happen with the major brands. So then what about buying gas here in Latin America? Same thing goes. I say never buy your gasoline at an off-brand station, unless it's an emergency. And when you're at a brand name station like a Shell, go ahead and buy regular every time. Unless, again, you've got a high-performance car. Though I have to admit, over the years, I've gotten into arguments with many people while sitting at the gas station. I'll be sitting shotgun with the owner filling up at a transnational like Texaco or Shell. The Latino or gringo driving will say, fill her up, super. That's what all Latinos call premium gas, super. Regular gas being regular. I can't tell you how many times I've said to the driver, you don't have to do that, put in regular. And that's when the argument begins. They say, everybody knows here in Latin America you have to use super. They say, Johnny, don't be a tacaño. Translation, cheapskate. By the way, how come you still hear people saying scot-free? Aren't the Scottish people pissed off about that? Anyway, sometimes I'll give non-believers the rundown on how engineers have done all the tests and they've found regular's just fine and with super, you're wasting your money. Though most people have been so doused by the marketing, no matter what you tell them, they don't buy it. So bottom line, if you're stuck at an off-brand station, go for the premium every time. Though when filling up at a transnational, get the regular. And though the difference in savings between premium and regular might not seem much to you, here's the math, you'll be surprised. Let's say the average price spread between premium and regular is 30 cents, and you use on average 10 gallons a week. Though you might not believe this, if you use regular over premium for 30 years, you're going to save more than $4,500 just in the regular versus premium cost spread. But you knew that already, right? Though I know after hearing this, a lot of you are still going to go with premium. Why? Because Big Oil has marketed you to death and you believe them over science. Enough said about that. All right, now let's get to some of those solar power questions I've been getting for people who want to go off the grid or 99% off the grid. Because as mentioned in a past show, you want to stay connected. Just for that oddball case when your solar power is down for repairs or whatever, and you need a backup. All right, first question. Johnny, how much available rooftop space do I need to put in an off-the-grid system? Okay, as mentioned in previous shows, if you're going off the grid, you're going to want to have close to 5,000 watts of solar panels. That's if, for example, you're in the Altiplano and are not running air conditioning. But you'll need twice that, or 10,000 watts worth of panels, thereabouts, if you're at the coast or in lower altitudes and decide you're going to run air conditioning too. In that case, you'll have two identical systems but completely separate, with one of those systems wired to your regular circuit panel running your 110-volt stuff. And that's practically everything in your house except air conditioning and or an electric car. Now, you've probably heard all the talk that you can charge an electric car through your regular 110 outlet. You can do that, but it takes forever, probably 2 days to charge it completely. But if you charge it using the 220-volt system, the same one you'd be running your air conditioners on, you could charge your car's battery completely in about 4 to 6 hours. Oh, and do remember, if you're going off the grid, you never want to have an electric hot water heater because those things pull ungodly amounts of current. And you never want to have an electric dryer because those things are 220 volts too, and they take a hell of a lot of current. Though that's not to say you couldn't run them off your solar power system, but you'll deplete the battery in a hurry. That's why I always recommend for hot water and your clothes dryer, go with gas. It would be propane gas here in Latin America because they don't have piped in natural gas. No problem. It's really cheap. But really, it's not ideal to have your water heated with gas. Ideally, you could buy a solar hot water heater for a little over $1,000 generally. From then on, your hot water is absolutely free. And since those things have virtually no moving parts, they can last 20, even 30 years. Now, as far as rooftop space needed, you figure each solar panel covers about 2 square meters, more or less 2 square yards. That's just slightly over 3 by 6 feet, around 18 square feet, let's say 20, to make the math easier. Now, you heard me say over and over again, you need between 4 and 5,000 watts. Now, with the new panels that are around 360 to 400 watts each, and you have to set them up in groups of three, that means you'll have 12 panels. That's if you don't have air conditioning. And 12 panels times 20 square feet per each one. That's 240 square feet that you'll need on your roof to mount your panels. That'd be like the size of a small two-car garage, or the floor space of a decent-sized master bedroom. Now, you have to remember, the newer panels are so efficient, for their size, that is. If you were to set up a similar system just 5 years ago, it would take double the roof space. And to me, what's so great about the solar industry is that about every 5 years, the efficiency doubles on the panels. That means you have to use half again as much space on your roof. And battery density per weight doubles. So, for example, today, a Powerwall battery all-in-one system might weigh 300 pounds, way too heavy for one person to maneuver around. But just 5 or so years ago, it weighed twice that. And in 5 years from now, it should weigh half again as much. But in no way am I telling you to wait 5 years to do this just because things will be smaller and cheaper. You could chase your tail on that forever. Look at it this way. If you live in the Altiplano and don't have air conditioning, you could have electricity for life for around 8 to 12 grand. And about double that if you're running air conditioning and or have an electric car, because as mentioned, you'll need two systems. Oh, and here's another thing you'll really like. If, for example, you don't have air conditioning, you're in the Altiplano, or maybe you are at the beach or at low altitudes. You don't want AC and you like sweating, but you want an electric car. You don't have to have a complete extra system for that. All you need is the solar panels and, of course, a small charge controller. You don't need the batteries. That's the expensive part and you won't need them. Because guess what? Your car is your battery. So again, I recommend 5,000 watts of panels. That's 12 panels wired in groups of three. And if you go on OLX.com, you can pick up those panels for $100 a piece. That means $1,200 for your panels and maybe $800 for mounting and the charge controller. And now for around $2,000, maybe a few $100 more because you'll need a special connector to hook to your car when you're charging it. Let's say $2,500 complete. You'll have a car that costs you nothing to run. Think of it this way. If you had a car with a regular gas engine and you used 10 gallons a week and your gas was $3 a gallon, it would take you around a year and a half to blow $2,500. So the payback on the solar panels and associated equipment for an electric car is about a year and a half. Then after that, every mile or kilometer you go is absolutely free. And how long will that system last? Well, your panels are guaranteed for 25 years. It turns out most panels will be putting out 90% of their rated value in 25 years. So then to answer that rooftop space question, if you don't have AC, you need 250 square feet of space. If you're running air conditioning units and or have an electric car, you'll need double that or 500 square feet of roof space. Now, if you can't picture or imagine how much space that would take up, look at it this way. Your average house is between 1,200 and 2,000 square feet. So even if you have a very tiny house of 1,200 square feet, you'd be using less than a quarter of that roof space if you didn't have an electric car or AC. And if you had electric car and or AC, you'd be using less than half of that total roof space to mount your panels. All right, next question. Johnny, how do condominiums, townhouses, and residential towers feel about solar systems? Aha, well, here's the thing. If you're renting, forget about a permanent off-the-grid system. My advice is to never mount anything permanently on something you don't own. However, if you're renting, by all means, get a portable system because you'll need that backup and you can assemble and disassemble the thing in under 15 minutes. Just remember, for a permanent solar setup, you'll have to mount the racking for the panels directly to the roof. If you don't own the place, the landlord probably won't let you do that. And if he does, chances are he just might be thinking when you leave, he gets the system. Now, if you own your condo or townhouse, my suggestion is to always buy a penthouse. Then you get the whole rooftop. It's yours. And even if it's the kind of rooftop terrace that's got a jacuzzi and chairs and a barbecue and railings around it, as long as you own the penthouse, you can put one of those open-air carport roofs on it and still keep that living and party space. Meanwhile, right above you on the roof, providing your shade, are your solar panels. Now, a lot of condos and townhouses, especially ones in residential towers, will have balconies, big balconies sometimes. So if you're looking to buy on another floor that's not the penthouse, always find out from the owner if they allow you to construct a roof like gazebo or carport to shade that balcony. Most often they will because you own it. Then you can mount your panels on top of that. In fact, I've seen many setups like that in big Latin American cities. Just take a drive in a high-end area where they've got residential towers and look up. Check it out. You'll see quite a lot of them have big balconies with a metal or wooden beam roof. And more of those roofs have solar panels, though you can't see them from down below. Yep, down here, people are catching on, with solar companies popping up everywhere. Even though very few Latin countries let you tie to the grid and sell your electricity back to the power company. The point is, one of the few expensive things here in Latin America, besides having things imported from the States or Europe, is the cost of electricity. If, for example, you're paying, let's say, 10 or 15 cents a kilowatt hour in Missouri, you can expect, if you move to practically any Latin American country, to pay double that. So when talking about money and the break-even point and the payback time, it's always worth it here in Latin America to go solar. All right, we're not quite finished yet with the solar stuff, but we're getting to the end of the show. We'll be diving deeper into that stuff over the next few shows, so stay tuned. Meanwhile, don't forget my upcoming January 2021 Expat Insider Seminar. We're already more than half filled. Just check out expatplanb.com. Read all about it and sign up while the early bird discounts are still in effect. And don't forget to check the seminar info sheet to find out how you can kill two birds with one stone. That is, come down to the seminar and at the same time, apply for your permanent residency in Guatemala. And once you have it, remember, you only have to spend one day a year in the country to maintain that residency. And after 5 years, you can apply for permanent nationality and passport. But you knew that already, right? South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.